Welcome back to How She Really Does It with Corinne Motokaitis on KDRT LP 101.5 FM. We have Patricia Carrington here with us today, and she is the co-author of Love You, Mean It, A True Story of Love, Loss, and Friendship, with three other women who are all faced the tragedy of 9/11. Welcome, Patty.
Thank you so much for having me. Good afternoon.
Thank you for coming on the show today.
Oh, my pleasure.
So, for the listeners who are just tuning in, can you give them a little bit of background about the book and what it is and your story?
Sure. I wrote this book with three other women. We all lost our husbands in the World Trade Center on September 11th. We had not known each other prior to that date, and we met at various times. Claudia's husband sat next to Anne's husband, and so on that day, she reached out to Anne to see if she had heard from Ward and if she had had any information. So they became immediate friends through that bond. And then Julie was introduced by a family friend and met Claudia on Halloween 2001. And then a different mutual friend who knew both my husband and Claudia's husband introduced us on New Year's Day 2002. And Claudia had been experiencing the same conversations with each of us separately, but they all echoed, it was the same sentiment. So she just thought, in July 2002, she just thought, you know what, maybe the power of a group is better than the power of two. So we all got together, and the chemistry of sharing our experience was immediate and very powerful. So the group formed at that point, and it was just, from then on out, we got together probably, I don't know, at least once a month in the beginning. You know, we would be on the phone every day and just sharing our feelings. And it was the most honest feeling we could have because that person walked in our shoes.
Mm-hmm. What an incredible bond the four of you can have together.
Yeah, it's incredible because oftentimes, you know, we were all in our mid-30s, essentially, give or take. And it's so interesting, you don't really meet your best friend in your mid to late 30s, mm-hmm. But it was just an automatic, very strong bond born out of that commonality and deep grief.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of strips you down to a very honest and vulnerable level, and it was essentially the first time we had opened up since the event. When you experience a loss like this, I can only speak to my experience, but you shut down completely emotionally and don't really want to meet anyone new, don't want to experience anything new, don't want to travel anywhere new. And so it was a risk really to open up your heart again to anyone. And it was a relief when it worked out so well.
You know, I'm on the West Coast, and so, you know, we saw it or heard about it on the radio, and some of us may have had friends out there, but I had a friend that was actually living in Brooklyn, and she moved out west after that mostly because of 9/11, and
right.
And just the whole experience and how surreal it was, and you know, the craziness, and I know you talked about this a little bit in the book, about even having, just communicating with other people, you know,
yeah.
By phone was difficult at times.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, in the early days, you just, you know, yeah, everything was shut down. It's interesting because, as you know, I live in Brooklyn, and I couldn't imagine leaving it,
uh-huh.
You know. I mean, I do spend time away, but I don't know. It's you know, I live a couple townhouses down from the promenade there, and I just overlook Lower Manhattan and walk my dog twice a day. And for some reason, looking up into the sky, talking to Kaz, and I don't know. I don't want to say it's comforting, but that's, I kind of, my imagination just talks to him there very comfortably.
Well, and I would imagine that everybody has their own way of going through this situation.
Exactly.
And some people need to leave, and some people, they need to stay.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's really the premise of our friendship, and a lot of what the book is about is that there are four women with an incredible bond of a friendship, but we all are different individuals, and we all did react somewhat differently in our grief and on our journey. And it was the support and it was the encouragement from the other women that let us be who we are without regrets and with honesty. And so I think you're absolutely right. We all, there is no rule book to loss of any kind. And so you just have to sort of navigate. You're a new individual overnight and you don't know who the heck you are and you don't know how you're going to get to the next day. And you just do. You just put one foot in front of the other. But if you have an encouragement from family and friends and then another set who, you know, have experienced the same thing, it's just that human connection that helps all of us get through whatever loss we're faced with. And I think you're absolutely right. You just have to get through it however you do. And there is no right, wrong, or right. You just, it's soul searching.
Yeah, and did you find it more difficult to be around those who had not gone through the same experience?
I didn't want, in the beginning, I would say many people, as you probably know, mm-hmm. there is a stage of grief that is anger. And I'm not sure if I was angry necessarily at anyone, but I just shut down. So, yeah, I didn't want to, I couldn't speak to the people who didn't experience it because everybody, I feel like, in this world experienced something that day, very different, but I think it was hard for me to relate to somebody who hadn't known my husband because I thought he was so tremendous and I thought he is the other half of me, so how could someone know me now because my other half isn't here?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I don't think it's, I just think it was more that than what you experienced that day because everybody experienced mm-hmm. something. Or there were so many people, I shouldn't say everybody, but there are so many people, you know, survivors to, I mean, there's such kind of pain that I wouldn't say that. I felt like more that my other half was gone, so how could that person understand me?
Mm-hmm.
But as your grief matures, we should say, or heals, I think it actually makes you open up more than you ever have because you become more of an empathetic person. You're more understanding that everybody, unfortunately, loss is universal, and in some way, you're likely to be affected in life. And it's just, you know, people, once you sort of tell your story, somebody else tells their story, and it's just this domino effect of sharing. And so I actually think you become more open to somebody else's stories because you can, not that you can put yourself in their shoes, but you can understand pain more. Whereas I think prior to this happening to me, I was sort of a naively happy person.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not sure if I could understand somebody who, you know, husband was killed in a car accident or father was diagnosed with, you know, my father was diagnosed with cancer, so I can go there, but... You know, it's just, I think once you experience that pain, you can be empathetic to others.
And, well, in your situation, too, and I'm sure many others, where lots of people came together to help, to find, you know, and so maybe they didn't have a spouse that they couldn't find, but there was everybody in that area was touched tremendously.
Correct.
And then also, didn't your friend in London know before you did that something had happened?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's just amazing.
It is amazing. It is amazing. It's, yep, she was the one that told me. So, yeah. God bless her.
I'm talking with Patricia Carrington, and you're listening to Karen Motokaitis on How She Really Does It on KDRT. LP 101.5 FM, and Patricia Carrington is one of the co-authors of Love You, Mean It, A True Story of Love, Loss, and Friendship. And I'd like to read a passage from the book right now about your relationship with your husband. It's Kaz, correct?
Yep.
Let's see. That same weekend on Sunday, September 9th, 2001, leaving the morning service at the church in East Hampton, the same church where we'd been married, the same church where we would later have his memorial, Kaz stopped me in the churchyard. He took my hands. He looked me straight in the eyes. Love, let's stop and reflect what we accomplished in our first year of marriage. I laughed and told him, love, Lola, laughter, and no loans. That year, Kaz had spent months tracking down the perfect border terrier, our baby, Lola. I didn't want to hang about in the churchyard. I was antsy that morning, eager to go home and change so we could go get to the beach. The sun was shining. The waves were waiting. I didn't want to waste time. I assumed Kaz would always be there and that there was all the time in the world to talk, that we could reflect on our first year of marriage when our anniversary came around 3 weeks later. I didn't take the time to share properly. That was a passage that really touched me because, as I told you earlier, that in the show we talk a lot about living in the moment, you know, and really because we just don't know what will happen the next time or, you know, the next moment. And a lot of times I think we push off. We're so busy. It's like, oh, okay, we've got other things to do. And do you feel that you live more in the moment now?
Yes. Because I think you do, as a newlywed that young at 34, like I said, you know, I always expected him to be there. Of course, what would lead me to think we couldn't have had that conversation on our anniversary on September 30th. Mm-hmm. But now you're so aware of the fragility of life that you sort of take it more seriously and less seriously because, you know, we tend to, as you said, in our society, takes ourselves so seriously and our career so seriously. But what are we here to accomplish? And it's not what we can accumulate or what we have or who we've become. It's how we can affect somebody else, or how we can, you know, make that connection. It's not, you know, you can watch a gorgeous sunset from wherever, but if you don't have someone next to you talking about it, for me, that's what I've really realized through this is the human connection, the appreciation, and, you know, you're right, whether it's talking to your parents or your nephews or your friends or your lover or whomever it is, honestly, you know, how many times can you say what you really have on your mind to them? You know, you're just more aware that maybe when you shut that door, you know, I'm not saying it's a fatalistic point of view, but it's seize the moment, seriously. Mm-hmm. You know, because you don't know how many of those moments you're going to have. And so, you know, whether it's simply, you know, have dessert tonight because who cares, or whether it's, you know, pursue a dream that you've always had best you can because you don't know how much longer you're going to be here.
Mm-hmm. But wasn't Kaz like that, though?
He was. He was. And I don't know how some people have it. I was a more conservative person, and I say was because I think you take on the traits of your lost mate. I did. I don't know why, but it's like balances. He's incorporated in my mindset, and so, you know, he always did take the more complicated route in life, and it would sometimes drive me crazy, but it was always worth it, you know. And I say this in the book, when we packed up for the beach, we packed up everything you can imagine for every weather, for every craving, for every sport, you know. But in the end, it made life so full. And he was constantly over the top, which, you know, has its good and its bad, but it seems to me he accomplished what you want to accomplish when you're alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe except for a child, having a child, but I think he experienced so many of the emotions that we want to, so he was courageous. Human being.
I think something that you said about just, you know, accomplishing the things that you want to in life, and I think, unfortunately, some people's lives are shorter than others.
Right.
But there are sometimes people that can live a long lifetime and not go through, whether it's feeling or living their life, yep, really to the fullest.
Yep.
And there's a gentleman, I don't know if you've heard about him, he's one of the professors at Carnegie Mellon, and he's dying, his pancreatic cancer, and he's 47. And but one of the things that he talks about is that he's lived this full life. I mean, it's unfortunate because he's going to leave his wife and his three children and stuff, but he's really lived his life.
Right.
And he's had amazing opportunities, and you know, and you look and you go, wow, you know, in 47 years, look at what he's done.
Right.
You know,
and I think if we can all keep that in mind, and like I said, I don't think you can have a fatalistic, like, if I were to die at 40, what do I want to, but always keep it in the back of your mind. So it's, you know, so much of us all the time keep doing the grind of work, and we have to in order to pay the bills, and there's a level of responsibility in life, but it's also, if you've always wanted to go to that one place, or if you've always wanted to see that one thing, or make that phone call to a friend from high school, or whatever it is, it's just pursue it, you know, do it. Even if it's as silly as you've always wanted that one handbag, go for it. You know, you'll sacrifice the other things that aren't so important. And, you know, if you want to learn how to cook, take a class. It's just like so much, and I am guilty of it, is, you know, it was like I put my toe into life a little bit. And now, you know, it's just I go full bore more so than I did. Because, you know, 47 or 34 or whatever, these are just such fragile times, you know, and I can't imagine leaving children. I just can't imagine it. But we all know we're going to die. That's the ironic thing. We just don't know how and when.
Well, and I think we just put off so much. It's like, yeah, oh, I can do this later, or oh, I can get together with this girlfriend later, or, you know, oh, I can get this done later because I have, you know, especially in our society, because work is such a important thing, partly financial, partly because of status or,
right,
you know, whatnot. But work seems to command so much. I mean, the way I'm planning my weekend is incredible because it's pretty much going to be work because I have all this stuff to do.
Yep.
And as we're having this conversation, I thought maybe I just need to hang out with my kids a little bit.
Right.
You know, and right, you keep saying, oh, it can be next weekend, or oh, it can be, but you just don't know.
Right. And those children grow and they'll be different when you do it in a year or in, you know, it's, I agree with you wholeheartedly, even if it's not, you know, bite off a little bit. Don't, even if it's whatever dream you have is seems inundating, it seems, you know, too large to take on today, well, just do a fraction of it, or just do a part of it, or just, you know, sure, you can't reserve the afternoon for your children, but, you know, reserve an hour,
mm-hmm,
you know, because I think sometimes we put it off because it seems that they can't achieve it. So it's just like, break it down, you know, and I really do believe, you know, and I quit my job, and I went back to school to pursue this dream of a master's degree, and it was really frightening. It was, you know, a job provides stability and financially, mentally, socially, and you're all, you know, a student is much more isolating, and you don't really know what your day is, and you don't know how you're going to write that paper, and you don't, and, but it's just, in the end, you feel like you're an inch taller. You know, and it's whatever makes you stand a little taller or a little happier, go for it. And just open up your heart, because sometimes, as that professor, you know, said, sometimes it's that you don't even know what it is that you're missing or that you mm-hmm. want. It's just mm-hmm. open up, because you don't know how long you're going to be here. So don't risk not doing, living, believing, because you could get to 90 and not know what it was. So take a chance. Figure it out.
And I think that's so important, because, you know, a lot of women that listen to the show, sometimes they, you know, they come up to me and they're stuck. You know, whether they've transitioned out of the workforce to stay home and take care of the kids, or they're in a career and they're not happy with it, or they just, you know, or they do what they're always supposed to do.
Right.
Yeah, maybe they have the PhD. I mean, I have a couple friends who have PhDs and are gone, this isn't what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the reason I got the PhD was to show somebody, you know, to show my mom that I could do it.
Right.
But I don't really like
Looks good on my resume.
You know, and it takes tremendous courage, I think, to say, okay, I'm going to make a change. Yes, I'm, you know, my 30s or 40s, I'm going to make a change. And one of the things I try to encourage women is you're still young enough. You know,
right.
It's never too late.
That's so true. So true. It's so true. And that's why we tend to put it off, you know, because you are, I can't go back to now. I can't change my career now. I can't. And I think the other thing you have to remember is you can't live every lifestyle. You know, it's like, oh, I wish I lived in suburbia. Oh, I wish I lived in the city. Oh, I wish I was a working mom. I wish I was a stay-at-home mom. Like, I feel like we're so lucky in our generation to have so many choices.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the other hand, the choices can get confusing because you can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's give yourself a break. Don't be so hard on yourself either. Don't, you know, build this perfect resume of an ideal human being, but then be sort of empty inside. You're not trying to prove. We have to try to get over trying to prove for somebody else, but just being content and at peace internally, you know? And if it's, I want to take an hour to go work out on my own, or I don't, whatever sort of floats your boat, it's like I said, just do it even a little bit, because it's hard to change the whole persona. So it's like a little bit at a time, and just seek out what it is. You know, some people know when they're born that they want to be an actress or they want to be a doctor or, but the majority of us are trying to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
What makes makes the whole thing tick. And it's okay if you make a few mistakes, I think.
So how did you make this change of going and working and then going to decide to become a student?
Well, twofold. Once I was not academically stellar in my undergraduate. And so I wanted to almost prove it to myself. And then I took a class or two, and then it's just addicting. I just love learning, and I feel like that's what triggered it for me, is walking away, learning something about the Bible or the Greeks or, you know, any piece of literature, you know, rereading the Scarlet Letter. It's just eye-opening at, you know, 20 years later from the first time you read it. And so it just, my adrenaline, you know, kicked in. And so, but then on the other hand, it's, as I said, it's quite scary because now that I have this, I had a financial background, it's like, when I go back to work, what do I do? You know, so it's, change is so healthy and it's so good and it's rewarding, but you're out there and you've left your comfort zone, and that presents a whole different set of challenges. So I just, you know, turned 40 and I was feeling stronger after the period of mourning, and I had worked for almost 20 years in the career, and I just felt like, I hate to say it, but if I died tomorrow, do I want to be known as a banking executive?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer was no. So, you know, and maybe what is interesting is it may just come full circle and I may go back in that career.
Mm-hmm.
But I know I took time to breathe and I know I took time to pursue this. And it's not wrong if I go back. It was an incredible, you know, 2 years of learning experience. So, but it may also lead me to teaching or to some other career. So I think sometimes too is when we seek our soul or seek what makes us happy, you might not know your destination. You might not know where you're going, but it's the journey, it's the travel, it's getting there. We're so always so in a rush to get where we want to, but it's like, why determine, you know, some people do know where they want to get, but some people don't, and that's okay. And so that's where I am. I'm not sure where I'll be. I'm not sure what my career will be at 45 or 50.
You know, so when you were talking, so many things went through my mind, and one had to do about the journey. I mean, it's always about the journey. You know, we may strive for the end point, but when we do get to the end point, we look back at the journey, and we don't know. Once you're going on that journey, you don't know the possibility. I mean, when you start the journey, you don't even know what's out there.
Right.
And then you're going through the journey, and so many different things are coming at you that you didn't even realize were possible.
Right.
You know, and so it's this growth and this evolving that occurs.
That's right. So you're never even really at your destination.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just things will, our lives are so stimulating. As you said, there are so many other things that happen in the meantime that changes the end result. You know, I mean, you know, Anne is a perfect example who, you know, she has this, you know, perfect little twins after having, you know, a beautiful son, and one of the children are diagnosed as a handicap. You know, you don't expect that. That's not what we dream about. That's not what we foresee will be our fate. But you deal with it and you find the beauty in that.
Uh-huh.
And Anne is blessed with Elizabeth. And I think that, you know, we don't always know what's in store. We don't always know what the variables are to get to that destination. And things are going to happen, and you just got to roll with it because they're going to happen. And it's almost like, you know, even I wanted nothing to change. You know, I didn't throw out things in the refrigerator for years. I mean, I still have canned goods. I still have food left. I mean, I didn't wash towels. For, you know, a bath mat for a year. You know, it's, but I guess you get to a point where you realize things change. You can't stop it. So you wake up and you realize you're either on the sidelines, belligerently trying to stop time, which you cannot successfully do, and missing out on mm-hmm. things, or get on the bus and go with it.
Yeah, because if you don't change and evolve, then you're not living.
Right. And then not only have you lost the life of the person who's not here, who wants to be living, well, I don't know if I'm, you know, maybe he does, maybe he doesn't, but, you know, you're losing your own. So it's just a bloody waste, a terrible, terrible waste. And so I think you realize that, but when you're in the throes of whatever loss it is, you can't see that. You know, and loss is universal, and whether I think we all go through it in some way, shape, or form, whether it's a pet or a parent or a job or, you know, an addiction of some kind, and it's just the only advice I could give from meeting these girls and writing this book is reach out and do believe that there is going to be the light at the end of the tunnel, because there will be one. And don't put a time on it, you know. Don't say, oh, in 5 years you'll feel better. In 3 years you'll feel better. You know, you'll feel better when you feel better. You'll take a couple, 3 steps forward. You'll probably take 2 back. You'll take 1 forward. You may take 2 back, you know. But we're all, like I said, I think we're all trying to navigate and do the right thing. But I don't know who has the, you know, answers to what exactly is the right thing, because we're all different.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you, the reason I do this show is that other people can learn, or the listeners can learn from other people's experiences. And sometimes it's so that, you know, you realize you're not the only person going through this.
Right.
And like in your situation, you found other women who had, you all suffered a loss,
mm-hmm.
and you could hear each other's stories, and you can, you know, be there for each other. And then learn how different people get through things, and realizing that, you know, you have 4 women who got through it very differently,
mm-hmm.
and have different paths, and that's okay. But just realizing that you're not alone.
Exactly. So go on to blogs or join group therapies, or I agree. Like you do, you feel isolated. And even before I met them that July, I thought they're not going to get it. They didn't have a husband like I did,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's what you think. But, again, it's that connection. You can learn from them. They can learn from you. And, you know, they can draw out something in you that can make you a better person, and you them. And there is such a reward in helping somebody else. And I think that's what we also learned from the group. It gave us a great deal of strength to help somebody else, because at that point you felt so hopeless. Mm-hmm.
This is Corinne Motokaitis, and you're listening to How She Really Does It on KDRT LP 101.5 FM. And I'm talking with Patricia Carrington, co-author of Love You, Mean It, A True Story of Love, Loss, and Friendship. And now, so you had people that were supporting you changing. Were there people that were not as thrilled about your changing? Like maybe colleagues when you left to go to school?
No, I think, let's see, the colleagues, no. I think that when people saw the such sadness mm-hmm. in me for so long that they, I think, whether it was my family or my friends, I think they were so overwhelmed that I was actually willing, wanting to take a risk, wanting to go out and live again and not sort of be under this blanket of sadness, that I think they shared in my joy. You know, the change was difficult for everybody in the beginning, more so than 6 years later when I quit, but because overnight you become a different person, and you don't know who you are. You don't know what your future holds. So your parents don't know who you are, and your friends don't know who you are. Nobody, everybody's sort of treading on eggshells just because we're so used to making slow changes and having these goals and meeting goals. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, overnight, it's all, you know, all the paint came off the canvas, and it's this blank canvas. And you almost don't even know how to act. It's like an adolescent. You revert back to teenage years, like, what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to do this? And you're just, bumbling your way through life, and therefore your loved ones are reacting to that bumbling, and everyone's just bumbling around, trying to do the best they can and avoid the saddest moments. And, but the more you do it, and the more you live with it, and the repetition, like a lot of times people say, time heals wounds. I don't necessarily believe it does, because I think you constantly live with the wound, but I think what time does is it provides strength, because it's repetition. It's, okay, I got out of bed the last 52 days, I can get out the 53rd day. Or I drove down that road, or I went to that restaurant. And each time you experience that, you know, the first time it brings a great deal of melancholy and sadness. And then it slowly evolves, and it becomes, oh, remember when? And you reminisce, and you laugh, and you know, now I can go to that churchyard and see it differently than I did 5 years ago when I went there. Mm-hmm. So it just provides you with your confidence back. You become, not only do you become, you gain your strength back, but you become this multidimensional individual, because you're living with all the everything. So I think, you know, it's you become it's almost a better person.
Well, because you're also getting, you're much more connected with yourself and who you are,
and people around you, because they've experienced loss of a kind, and then they open up, and you open up, and you, again, it's that human connection that you're making.
Well, and maybe also since with the World Trade Center, I mean, there were so many people that, you know, experienced loss that a huge part of your environment changed also, too.
Yep.
And because typically when somebody goes through change, you know, just that maybe the rest of their community doesn't have, sometimes people, that those surrounding them will say, why are you doing this? Or, you know, you have this great job. Why would you leave a great job to go
right.
back to school?
Right.
You know, but maybe people in your environment were more understanding because they experienced it themselves.
Right. 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 And I must say, I think that either I'm oblivious or I didn't feel a lot of judgment. Maybe in the beginning, but I feel like people around me just say, okay, you know, do what you need to do. You sort of, you know, suffered enough and live now. And so I don't feel any sense of, like you said, maybe it's because so many people around me experienced the event in different ways, or whether, you know, it's, I agree, though, I don't feel a lot of negative judgment at all.
And then you have your support system with the women, and you guys call yourself the Widow Club?
We started calling ourselves the Widows Club because it was, you know, my girlfriends or whomever was like, who are you going out with tonight? And it would be Anne, Claudia, Julia. It just sort of ended up with the Widows, the Widows, the Widows. And they would be like, do you have to say the Widows? So it sort of ended, it shortened to the WC. So, yeah, the Widows Club. Yes, and now it's extended because the three other widows are married, and Anne has a new set of twins, and Claudia just had a baby girl last week, so our club has expanded.
Wow, wow, that's fabulous.
Yeah.
And so through all of this, where are you now compared to where you were prior to 9/11?
I am a more complex person. That's what I would say. I was young and naive and had not experienced loss of any kind, really, and not suffered. So I was just swept away in this relationship, just assumed I would have 2.2 kids, just assumed I would have a nice house and all would be well. So now I make no assumptions. I don't struggle to have something just so, because I know it might not be. I would say that I'm a stronger person and a peaceful person and a happy person again, but I don't have, I have no idea what my future is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think when you're with somebody, you have, it's a safety net. You know they will take care of you, and you know you will take care of them, and you know, you assume you'll grow old together, and you're not sure what will happen in between, but at least you have that. Whereas I feel like I'm not sure what will happen. I'm not sure where my career will be. I'm not sure if I'll get married. I'm not sure if I'll have children. I'm not sure if I'll live. I don't, you know, so I think that I live more in the present by pure nature of I have no idea what the future will be, and I work at the future, and I work at the infrastructure to make the future, the possibilities out there, but mm-hmm. inevitably I live in the present because that's what I know. That's mm-hmm. what I have.
And when you're in the present, though, you can see the opportunities, because when we plan for the future, and we're always planning, we miss those opportunities that are coming by every day.
Right. That's right. That's right. That's absolutely right. Because even if it's someone calling to say, oh, you want to go away next weekend? You know, if my whole calendar was planned out for the rest of the year, I would say, oh, well, I can't because X, Y, Z. But, you know, as simple as that, oftentimes I'll say, sure. And that could be anything from, you know, the opportunity of joining a garden club to, you know, whatever it is. But, and I admit sometimes it's uncomfortable and potentially scary because, you know, routine is comforting in its own way. Mm-hmm. And as I said, it's almost like you feel protected or safe when you know what's out there. So, like everything, there's a good to it and a bad to it. And the good to it is you're open to all of these possibilities because you see. There's not a lot of static in my way. There's not, I don't have, the energies that I have aren't out in the future because there's too much in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the other hand, you know, it's nice to have 3-year, 5-year, 10-year goals. So, you know, life is a balance, and I think we all search for it. And some people tend to be very rigid planners and would like more open time and open space. And then, you know, I think that I would enjoy a little bit more structure, and I'm working towards that.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a sense of freedom for sure, not having rigid goals outlined.
Well, and I think women more so than men, we kind of have things more planned out. It's like, okay, I'm going to do this is logical, I'm going to do this, you know, and there's kind of this where men don't have that as much in that, whether it's with the guests that I've interviewed or in other, some other interactions and stuff that I've seen.
I think men too, I don't know, I can't speak for a man since I'm not one, but I feel like oftentimes the burden, whether it's a financial burden or they have responsibility is much more on their shoulders oftentimes, or they feel it is, and so they don't open to possibilities. They just do the what's expected, I think.
Okay.
I think.
Okay, well, because I was thinking about college men and, you know, like guys being athletes, and they'll be an athlete and it's like, oh, you know, I can be a, I have a friend who's a baseball coach at a college, and a lot of the guys are like, okay, well, do I have like, you know, 1 in a millionth chance of being, you know, major league baseball player? You know, sure, I'll do it. Where a woman's going to be like, well, this doesn't make sense. Well, I'm going to devote this much time.
Statistically.
Yeah. And so, you know, but I think it probably does change as men get older because their society does expect certain things from them.
Mm.
We're wrapping up with How She Really Does It on KDRT LP 101.5, and this is Corinne Motokaitis, and my guest is Patricia Carrington. She's the co-author of Love You, Mean It, A True Story of Love, Loss, and Friendship. And now, you know, fear is an interesting thing because I heard you mention that a few times. Fear, a lot of times, don't you think, can be kind of like it can keep you as a prisoner. And it can really stop you. Sometimes it can be a catalyst for people. But I also think that it can, you know, well, if I leave this job, I built this career,
yep.
You know, and if I leave and I go do, you know, the schooling, what's going to happen? There's not this plan. There's not this going to be this outcome.
Right. And there's a fear of not getting back in the workforce. How mm-hmm. am I going to do it? You know, how am I going to get back in? Where am I going to go? And that. Yeah, I agree. Fear can be so intimidating, it stops progress. Or, as you said, it can ignite progress. But carry on. I'm sorry. Did I interrupt you?
No, not at all. But I think one of the other things that you talked about is you don't have a plan, but you're not just sitting there going, oh, what's going to happen? You're doing stuff. You're moving. You're learning. You're growing. You're creating possibilities to come.
Right.
You just don't know what it is, and that is a freedom, you know, to have that openness and the possibilities and not be so rigid, like, this is what I'm going to do, and this is what I'm going to do, and, you know, and then this is what I'm going to do, and then a lot of times people get there and go, I don't really like this.
Exactly. So, but two things. One, we have a fear of failure, so
mm-hmm.
you don't take that chance because you think, oh, if it doesn't work out, then I look like a fool, and I had this great job, and how am I going to get it again? And you know, but it's for what? Or do you want to just stay in the same place, not growing and not searching and not trying? You know, it's which, but take the risk. And I think it's hard. It's really hard, especially because women are in different stages and have different levels of responsibility. You know, I don't have children, which is very painful, but then on the other hand, it gives me this freedom to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, as I said, life is, you can see it greener on the other side, and it's like, well, you know what, you are dealt with these cards, and I need to do what the best I can with these cards. I can't change it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's where that fear becomes freedom then.
Mm-hmm.
Because, okay, well, if I fail, I'll get back up again and I'll figure it out. And I think that's what this event actually has provided me is, hopefully, and in my mind, the worst thing has happened to me. So I can make it, whatever it is. You know, I can go back on whatever it is. It's given a huge sense of confidence.
Well, and, you know, so many times we hear stories of people who have, you know, had these horrendous childhoods and whatnot, and then they've moved on and gone forward. But your situation, and you talked about this in the book, was different. You had this wholesome life, and, you know, your parents were a little apprehensive about you moving to the city and, you know, starting your life in New York City and whatnot. And then you have gone through terrible tragedy, but you're coming out on the other end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know who said this, but someone said, everybody goes through difficult things, and it's not what you go through, it's how you handle the situations that you go through.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
and it's true, and you just try the best you can. And some people, you know, as you said, when you're going through it, sometimes you feel isolated and you think you're the only one who's going through it, but that's probably not right. So you're probably not the only one feeling however you're feeling, and it's you know, just try something. If it works, great. If it doesn't work, try it again. Try another method. Try another way. Try another approach. And, you know, you learn that you can have your sad days, but the next day will be okay. And I think that's the other thing about this repetition thing is, I still have bad days, but I know that I'll come back from the bottom because it's happened so many times now. And I think that's what I would encourage women searching for whatever they're searching is just try it. It will work out eventually. Maybe not on your timeline, but, you know, your reaction to whatever has happened to you is the crucial, because things will happen to all of us, but it's just our reaction that we can control,
mm-hmm.
or we can attempt to control.
Well, Patty, I really applaud you because you've gone through some very difficult situations.
Well, we actually have a website, thank you very much, loveyoumeanit.com, and we have had the most tremendous response, and all of our readers tell us their stories, and it's phenomenal and fascinating what happens to people and how, and their stories, and that's what it's all about. It's sharing stories to inspire us to try whatever it is that we want, because everybody has a story.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's why I do the show, because with your stories, others can learn, they can become inspired, empowered, and realize about the possibilities that are really out there.
Exactly.
So I really do applaud you.
I applaud you.
So thank you so much for coming on the show today, Patty. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a nice weekend.
Thanks, you too.
Take care.
Bye-bye. We have had Patty Carrington, the author of Love You, Mean It, A True Story of Love, Loss, and Friendship on the show today. And this is Corinne Modip-Kitis, and I'd like to thank you for listening to How She Really Does It on KDRT LP 101.5 FM. You can catch the replays on Mondays at 11. And in an upcoming show, we'll feature entrepreneur of organic children's clothing from ninaandtom.com. And then after that, we'll have former Miss America contestant Nancy Reed. Nancy is the author of Body Drama, Real Girls, Real Bodies, Real Issues, and Real Answers.
I'll be there in a hurry. you don't have